For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to have giving a talk this evening, Hogetsu, who is our teacher for sewing Buddha's robes, Roksu and Okesa, and is also a member of our practice council. So thank you very much, Hogetsu, for giving the talk tonight.
Thank you for offering me the opportunity. Good evening, Bodhisattvas.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for your sincere devotion to practice and offering your practice and your ears this evening. So I guess I'd like to begin by offering you something. A good friend of mine recently offered me a quote, which I can offer back to you. So this is a quote from a book by a poet who has a deep Zen feeling. And she's written, "Zen is less the study of doctrine than a set of tools for discovering what can be known when the world is looked upon from open eyes." And I don't know about you, but I can say that my Zen practice has been mostly discovering life, or just life. And I feel like life is a stream of events that just flow. You know, I've often said that I just think of things as just the next event. It's like this Dharma talk, it's the next event. There is an event called thirst. And Douglas offered me this wonderful, cool cup of water. So I'm going to have an event of enjoying that. And sometimes some of the events that I've been into have been hanging out at ancient dragon events. And that's taken up some of my time. Or time. It's not my time. But lately, I've been sharing life and moving in a stream of events with two 19-month-old toddlers. My twin nieces and their parents. And their parents are professional working people who don't have any of their family members around, nor a nanny. So you could say I'm sort of a nanny. So this has been sort of the stream I've been swimming in. So I'm not going to say too much about formal Zen stuff tonight. But I'm going to talk about my toddler experience, because I think we're sort of all like toddlers here in this Zendo, actually. Or in this life. But when people describe toddlers, I don't know what comes to mind for most people. 19-month-olds. Does anybody remember that age? Ben, I know you kids, Douglas. You boys, right? So people say things like, "They're on the move." That is an understatement. One woman I heard this morning at Wiggle Worm said, "My toddler, he's just exploring everything. He's so curious about everything." Like that was news. like every toddler. It's like every single thing. So this would be immediately turned upside down and sideways, right? Moved around, crawled under, used maybe as some kind of tool, hopefully not to execute the sibling. Toddlers love to touch things, turn them upside down, explore them, and everything just is like so new. They also like to copy gestures and words of other people, right, at some point. So you have to be a little careful. You start to realize, like, uh-oh. Watch what I do and say, because all of a sudden it's being repeated in public to everyone. So I think they're pretty cool teachers in this discovering what can be known when the world is looked upon from open eyes, because they kind of open my eyes. Like, you walk into a room, and this is like a toddler's room in a lot of ways. It's childproof. There's like plugs on the outlets. Things are kind of high, so they can't kind of reach them. The altar might be a little bit dangerous. But you walk into a room and you're sort of immediately going, what's safe here? And, you know, how is this baby proofed? You know? And no matter how well you think something is baby proofed, you find that they're ingenious at figuring out ways to be on the brink of disaster, you know, with so much activity and enthusiasm. I'm just amazed that they survive the first couple of years without, you know, killing themselves by eating something dangerous, like barrettes. All of a sudden, these barrettes were disappearing. And we're like, are they in a colon someplace, you know? But I found them, they were stuffed inside some toy, like a handful of them, right? Concealed, stuffed inside this toy. And I texted their dads with a picture and said, see here, this is... I think they're okay for now. But electrocuting themselves, you know, choking themselves to death, you know, the cord might... You think you've gotten all the cords out of the way, and somehow one is found, and the kid has got it around her neck. So falling off of high places, climbing everything, without some idea that they could fall. So they're constantly testing, you know, my idea about baby proofing. So this, like, you know, there's almost a purity in response too, and in very momentary kind of impulsive reactions, you know, like a minor little squirming tantrum, which usually dissipates, at least so far, fairly quickly. This is a lot like, you know, Zen practice, you know, where we have like these mini tantrums while we're sitting, you know, like frustration or wanting something to be different or just some gurgling inside, you know, and you sit for a little while and it goes away, you know. So toddlers, they're in that kind of Zen-like experience. And they need a very safe environment. So my nieces have a playroom that's about the size of the Zendo, actually. And it's, you know, pretty baby-proof, like I said, except for the occasional exception. And so they can just, it's a giant playpen. And I was like, wow, you know, this Zendo, I always think of the Zendo as a playpen for bodhisattvas. We're just, this is where we can play without doing too much damage. You know, we kind of sit quietly, we have quiet time. And then there's some noise that goes on, you know, bells and things, and we're quiet again. There's some talking. I'm telling you some story, you know, reading a little lullaby in this evening. So, you know, and these girls' playpens are actually, they're full of toys, books, and soft cushions. And it's like a Zendo. I don't know what's going on with this, you know, but I'm like obsessed with this idea. You know, our Zendo is, you know, it's an adult situation, or at least it appears to be. If anyone wants to really confess to being an adult here, you're welcome to. But this is a place to develop our capacities, you know, toddlers are learning about their motor skills and they're learning about their bodies and minds. And we actually are doing the same thing here. We're learning about our bodies and minds in a protected space, hopefully develop, you know, this compassion and awareness so that we can kind of get these tools that we can discover what can be known when the world is looked at from open eyes. So I sometimes think of the Zen forms actually a little bit like baby-proofing, you know, because we have these forms to kind of protect us, because, you know, there's a tendency when we're confronted with our experience to spin out a little bit. So these forms kind of help us, you know, get on a schedule and contain us, like sitting quietly, like remembering to bow to each other, maybe not talking too loudly, getting too riled up. So it just happens the circumstance of my life right now is kind of centered in this kind of family situation, so it's not as centered as it has been here at Ancient Dragon. And that will change. They'll grow up. And life changes. But this evening, I just really want to share my experience to help maybe, if at all possible, to encourage you to experience all of your life as realization. You know, realization of the inconceivably deep and seamless quality of our relatedness. And it's hard for us to see that, you know, our interdependent connectedness. It's hard for us to really grasp that, you know, in Shohaku, some of you, a lot of you, we were here when Shohaku Akamura spoke, you know, and he brings up the dreaded net of Indra, right? Like, everybody's like, the first time you hear the net of Indra, you're like, oh, wow, it's this beautiful thing. It's this, you know, idea of, or vision, or some visualization of each person is like a jewel in a net, and each person is connected to every other being, you know, in this net. And, you know, first few times that's kind of cool, and then you're like, oh, no, the net of Indra again, you know. So, but I was really touched by Shohaku's talk, and once again, yeah, the net of Indra, once again. Like, I kept thinking, what is that connection? You know, what is binding these? Every being is a jewel, right, reflecting every other being. And this is a symbol of the great teaching of interdependent co-arising or origination or dependency or whatever you want to call it. But the way in which things really are, not the way that we think they are, not the way that we can even experience them most of the time. There's the slightest possibility with open eyes, there's just a tiny understanding of that at times. But even then, you know, in that quote from this poet, it says, of what can be known when the world is looked at from open eyes. What can be known, you know, it's not we're going to know everything. It's just what we can know with these eyes that are pretty limited. And anything that helps us open those eyes a little more to see things as they really are, I think is nurturing and healing in the world. So I feel, you know, my nieces have that quality, you all have that quality for me. We do for each other, but the entire world does. So it's not just in this playpen of a Zendo. You know, sitting Zazen in our playpen, is there like kitchen activity happening? Thank you very much. Look forward to it. So the sitting in the Zazen, in the play, sitting Zazen in our playpen here is an important aspect of practice. You know, it helps us realize our true self in some ways. But right now, Caitlin and Katie, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're actually going outside of the playpen into the kitchen. There's danger in the kitchen, I can tell you that. So, you know, but they're bringing their practice right there. You know, we have the four basic postures, standing, sitting, walking, and lying down. In Buddhist scripture, those are like the four basic postures or bodily attitudes for practice. So, you know, this may be heretical because Soto Zen is like, you know, all about like sitting, za, sitting, Zen meditation. But I feel our activity, our whole activity is just one seamless offering of practice. We might not see it that way, though. And I don't know if that's true either, because I really don't know, but it's my guess. But I think that our life activity is our practice, wherever that is. So at any rate, just like Caitlin and Katie left the playpen, on occasion we take the toddlers out for planned activities, you know, adventures into less protected environments like the park or a zoo or someone else's home. Kind of a home leaving for all you fans of monks as home leavers. So, you know, the toddlers are little home leavers on occasion. And we left home one day and went to the park. It was one of the first times they could walk pretty mobily by themselves. So they started to get used to that kind of autonomy. But that stuff was pretty new for them. You know, maybe like 10 months, 11 months, something like that. And I was, you know, so you have to constantly watch toddlers. I think you actually, it's good to constantly watch adults too, but probably forget to do that sometimes and they get into trouble. But maybe some bodhisattva, there probably is a bodhisattva called constantly watching, constantly attending. But anyway, so watching, you know, her do her thing, and it's always a little bit of like, don't let her get too far away. I've always wanted to have, like, in Europe, people put leashes on young kids. So they're often traveling in public transportation. I suggested the leash, but that didn't go over too well with the parents. but nonetheless, so she's off the leash and roaming around the park, right? And, of course, discovers the one part of the park that is not grassy, but is full of just dirt, basically. Bare ground, you might say. I notice she's collecting something in her hands. And I'm like, okay, well, as long as it doesn't go in the mouth, we'll see what's happening. And at some point, the cupped hand has risen and is approaching me. And this is a common thing for her, like, fuck, for you. You know? And so I open my hands, and a big blob of dirt is deposited into my hands. And with sincerity, you know, these like big brown eyes going, I'm like, oh. I smile back, thank you. and I'm like, oh, what do you do with this? And, you know, so I actually put the dirt on the ground. She walks away very happy and continues to just bring more piles of dirt over, you know, continually. So there's this love of repetition, right? So so I was like, oh, we're doing this like offering and receiving kind of thing, like Orioke or something, you know, our ritual way of eating in the Zendo. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to eat this. But there's something about this that was inspiring. You know, this experience gave me this inspiration or this, to think about like receiving and offering and, you know, this great Zen practice. And I actually was thinking, well, the act, it's all just offering, you know, like the act of receiving is really an offering. Like you're offering to the person who's offering you something, the offer of receiving, but it's all this sort of mutual offering situation. And then I was thinking, like, in this net of Indra, that's really what's connecting everybody or every being. It's like this mutual offering. and resonance, kind of like some kind of, I don't know, pinball that just keeps going, of offering, you know. And it's you know, we might think we know what we're offering, but I don't think we actually really do know very much. And you know, we can have ideas about stuff, and Zen teaches us that that's just ideas. But there's something about that wholehearted, mutual, it's not even an exchange. It's a co-creation, you could say, that I think is something pretty deep. And even these young children know this, you know. So Teigen asked me what I was going to speak about, you know. And I guess I didn't really, like, want to say, oh, I'm going to talk about a toddler giving me dirt. So I so I made up something that sounded kind of like Zen-like. Buddhist, you could say. So there is a story, actually, about the Buddha receiving some dirt. Does anybody remember this story besides Teigen? So, you know, there's there's a lot of stuff that kind of points to doing something nice or something generous or caring, even if it's sort of offhanded and spontaneous, that somehow, you know, has good consequences. Usually it's framed in Buddhism, like, you know, in a former life somebody did this and then they became Buddha of this world system or whatever. But in this story, actually, there is a great Indian king named Ashoka, who was born, I don't know, a couple hundred years after the Buddha. But this king, Ashoka, is a very famous king in India who really is responsible for creating, I would say, an ethical state government, a kind and ethical government, and also of proliferating Buddhist principles across the Indian subcontinent as well as in other parts of South Asia. So Ashoka turned out to be kind of a pretty significant, if not extremely significant, leader. But there was a story that when Ashoka, in a former life, was a little boy, the Buddha came to town, and Ashoka liked him so much he wanted to give him something. Gave him a handful or a bowlful. Some places say a bowlful of dirt. And I thought, it's a normal thing for a toddler to do, right? Let me give you some dirt. But I bet some other people have received dirt from toddlers. I'm not the only one. If you haven't received a handful of dirt, you probably have received something like a dirty diaper. So I also think an offered so, like, without any extra stuff, right? It's like, bloop, legs go up, change this diaper. You know? You're like, okay. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing. And you know, I think about this and I'm like, what happens? Because actually we offer each other a kind of poopy diapers all the time. You know? Somebody cuts us off in traffic. You know? The Tenzo makes something for lunch that we don't like. Right? Someone asks us to do something that's not convenient. I mean, we also, of course, have things that, like, you know, we like certain things, right? Like, maybe we'll take somebody's poopy diapers, but we won't take somebody else's because we don't like them as much. So there's this kind of, you know, this is my contemplation as I'm taking care of these little girls. I'm like, yeah, you're teaching me a lot, you know, about my own limited ability to accept this life that I don't know anything about, really. And that we're constantly offering sort of our dirt and our diamonds to other people. They're offering it to us, and we're offering it to them, and we're actually, like, just grooving in that way with each other. This is the way it goes. This is actually, this everyday activity of our lives is, I think, how I understand embracing and sustaining all beings. It's this constant practice of offering. And if Zen is less the study of doctrine than it is a set of tools for discovering what can be known when the world is looked at from open eyes. I think that might be just enough. Enough. And I think that, you know, there is no end to this, discovering what can be known in this world where nothing, you know, really can be completely known. And so maybe that's my offering of not knowing, but enjoy it anyway. So that's all I have to say, Bodhisattvas. But how about she?
Thank you very much. Lovely talk. Thank you for offering this. Comments, responses, further offerings. Questions about toddlers, young or old?
I was just, one of the things I noted when you were making your talk, I just remember there's this very nice little section in Zen Line Beginner's Mind where he talks about keeping the spirit of repetition, you know, connection, keeping things fresh, and it's just, you know, when you're talking about this kid bringing the dirt, it's like, yeah, okay, let's say it.
That's the spirit of repetition.
My daughter was maybe a little bit older than that, but more or less that age. We went to a friend's wedding in on the beach in North Carolina, and it was a beautiful beach resort. And my daughter got obsessed with gravel parking lots, and all she wanted to do was go and stand in gravel parking lots and pick up pieces of gravel and give them to me. And so it took a while for me to go through that, here we are at the beach, why am I sitting in a parking lot, to eventually say, okay, we're sitting in a parking lot.
And you can pebble after
and
pebble
accept the pieces of gravel. Yeah, and once I could accept the fact that we were going to be in a parking lot, it was fine.
How'd you get to that place?
That's a really good question. I think by realizing that for her, she had no sense of why a beach was inherently better than a gravel parking lot. And that for her, a gravel parking lot was just as interesting and exciting as a beach. And so I figured, okay, fine. Let's go with that.
So that became the program. Right? Like, this is the event now. So I had an idea there was going to be this other event, but the schedule changed, and my event now is my daughter handing me these. Fortunately, she wasn't eating them, was she?
No.
Because that can happen. but there's some... So you learn something, right? Like, in practice, in Zazen, like, you know, you think the bell should be ringing at a certain point in time. But occasionally, a Doan could fall asleep. It has happened.
Don't want to be completely awake and just like goofing up.
That could also happen, yes. But it's not goofing up if we're all doing it together, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's you know, the bell was not rung at the time that it set on the schedule, let's say, or it was rung too many times or whatever. But it's not goofing up.
No.
And that's the difference, I think, with practice, is that you learn that it's not goofing up. It's we're all just offering to each other these little events.
Yeah, thinking of Thanksgiving and part of Prasso practice, as you're saying, is this the spirit of offering, but also the spirit of receiving. And receiving the offerings and recognizing that they're offerings, first of all, not just, oh, well, what's this gravel or this handful of dirt, but then to actually appreciate, oh, here's an offering. And it's not what we think, it's not incense and candles and flowers, it's something else. And then the appreciation, and then can we actually, oh yeah, oh, thank you. You know, that gratitude for what it is that we receive. And when we, and you know, we don't always feel that, but when we see that, that openness, that open eyes that you were talking about, that Zazen can allow us, I think that something happens then, and we, you know, we find a way of appreciating things in a new way. So, yeah. So, just to be able to recognize the offerings that are presented
as offerings. Yeah. And thanks, Ty. Yeah. So that's where I feel like there's this little like tantrum that happens. The offering there, it's like, yeah, what's this? It's sort of like, oh wow, what's that? Oh, it's gravel, and this is our situation. Okay. But there's often this like, well, not what I wanted. You know. There's actually a book called Far From the Tree, written by a man named Andrew Solomon, who writes about the experience of parents who receive children that are very different from them in some way, profoundly different, whether it's with a physical disability or a mental illness or a variety of neurological things, you know. But when all of a sudden you have a child who's very different than what you expected, and you know, this is our life situation with most people. They're very different than what we expected or ordered up. It's a very compassionate book, actually.
We talk about gifted children, and you know, maybe we're all gifted, but not in the way that, you know, anybody would expect.
You know, your example of parents with children that are much different than they expected, perhaps hope, or sort of leads, you know, to a question I was thinking about, because a child offering a handful of dirt, I mean, part of what's going on there is this clear intent for, you know, connection and for sharing and, you know, for, you know, here, Hogetsu, this is me. I got some dirt here, you know. You know, it's very, whereas, as you just sort of acknowledged, so much of our, you know, the experience that somebody cutting you off in traffic, it's not that at all. It's a matter of fact. It's kind of like the opposite. It's their inability to often, sometimes it's just an accident. Sometimes, you know, some of these things are just people's unwillingness to be aware of other people in the world because of a certain kind of self-involvement. So that makes receiving it as an offering more challenging.
Yes.
Because it's not offered as an offering. It can only be received as an offering, but that's difficult. So, you know,
from one viewpoint, it's not an offering.
Yes.
But I think with practice, you actually do see that as an offering. This is this person bringing their whole car in front of you, with their whole self. And you do the hokey pokey with that. But this is what the Net of Indra is about. It's about that, like... That actually is, even though it doesn't look that way with a kid, kind of look that way with a baby, especially. You know, when they get older, then you start not liking them a little more, I think. But, you know, but even with the person who's cutting you off, I think that actually that is that person, that they're bringing their full self at that time to this situation. It's not what I'm ordering and what I want it and what I like, and the form of it may seem odd from my limited self, but I think from the eyes of openness, there's space for that to just be the equivalent offering, actually, with equal, even though it is more challenging for me, at least now, maybe always will be. maybe after 10 more million lifetimes of Zen practice, it might not be such a difficult thing. But actually, that's a good point. It looks a certain way, but I actually think it's probably exactly the same.
That's a really interesting point you're bringing up, because sometimes there are offerings that are the wholehearted expression of the situation that someone gives to us personally or to the world or to mm-hmm. society that actually are causing harm.
Right.
And how do we receive them? And part of how we receive them may be to say, hey, that's this wonderful offering that I want to do my best to respond to in a way
right.
to offer back something that tries to change that or something like that. So it's not so receiving
meet it.
To meet it in a way that shifts it.
To meet it. See, I think just to if you really meet it, it does shift it somehow mm-hmm. in this ever shifting net of ping pong. But there's that's what I think is the hardest part. So like the other story I didn't mention about King Ashoka actually is King Ashoka was a bad dude.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when he was first king, he had like a torture chamber. He destroyed villages. He had, committed lots of murder in the name of his state. And at some point, the Buddha meeting him, or maybe somebody meeting him, like woke him up, and that shifted things. And then he adopted ethical standards and caring as part of his government program. But I don't know if people are really changed if we're coming up to them and saying, you're bad and wrong, and I'm not going to accept you and your offering. But to actually accept the whole of that doesn't mean to like go, oh, I'm going to collude with it and enable it.
Yeah.
But when you meet it and you're not trying to manipulate it,
right?
People sense the minute you're trying to like manipulate them.
Yeah, it's subtle. It's not yeah. so. It's not necessarily opposing,
right.
But it is meeting. But it's not just accepting. Oh, okay, no. That's great that you're torturing people.
That's right. Or if myself is such that I just cannot handle even the thought of torture, and I have to scream at Ashoka, "You torturing pig! I can't stand you." But I'm bringing my whole self to that situation. That's, again, part of this offering. Now, it's a tricky thing, right?
Yeah,
because
it certainly is.
Because there's awareness that is the key. And this is what we're doing in our playpen.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we need a playpen for this kind of awareness. Because it's very, you can get kind of slippery in it. But there's, it in your body. When you study and you sit in Zazen, every one of you has been sitting long enough that you feel that in your body when you're open, when you're... Even if you're like, oh, I can't stand this and I got to say something about it and it might not be the best, but I can't help myself. But you know the feeling that's this kind of openness. And it's the open eyes and hands of your body that's responding to the situation at hand. You all know that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know when it's not there. And that's our great responsibility, I think. I see what I'm trying to do here, and that's like creating chaos in that net of Indra. Just my riff on that. Sorry about that.
No, thank you.